Brother Brian, if you'd come on over, come front. For those of you that may be visiting with us, you heard in the opening prayer that our pastor, Luke Martin, is beginning a six-month sabbatical. And I'm serving as the interim pastor over that time. And when I agreed to do this, I asked for permission to ask some laymen from the congregation to help with the preaching over this time. And so over the next number of weeks, you're going to at various times notice in the bulletin that for next Sunday, there's a name that is not normally in that position. And so I do ask that you would especially remember those brothers. Of course, remember all of us when we're preparing a message. We all want to be led by the Lord. But I know it just is a little bit different for those who don't make their way up here very often. So let's just pray for Brother Brian. Father, thank you. Thank you for the message that you've already given Brother Brian. Thank you for his willingness. I ask that you would bless him for his willingness to serve us in this way. And now, Lord, as he has prepared himself to share your word, I pray that you would anoint him with the ability to do it in the way that he believes you want him to. So give him courage, give him calmness, give him presence of mind to be able to deliver your word today. And may each of us receive what is brought as coming from you. Through Christ I pray. Amen. God bless you, Brother Brian.
Thank you, David. So I need to write the time down. Am I on? It doesn't sound that way. You can hear me? All right. So I had to write the time down because generally I study and then Saturday I practice. So when I practiced, I went 50 minutes. So I want to pay attention to the time. But that being said, Luke, a couple of weeks ago when it was going to snow at 12 o'clock, he wanted everybody out of here by 11. He shortened his sermon so he could be out by 11. And since the snow already happened this morning, it's probably safer if I keep you a little longer, and you don't have anything to get home to tonight for anyway, so maybe I promise you, I'll have you out of here by 2 o'clock. That being said, I'm going to speak on respect this morning, so it wouldn't be very respectful of me to keep you that long, would it? So I better listen to my own sermon. But a number of months ago, I had to teach Sunday school for the youth class, and so I taught a lesson on respect. And so here were some of the questions that I had to think of. First, you know, what is the definition of respect? So we're going to take a look at the definition. Is respect earned or given, or is it both? I mean, I remember when I was a young lad that you need to earn my respect. I mean, when I was 17, 18, 19, I was all that and more. You know, you got to earn my respect if you want to be my leader. I grew up since then. So respect, we'll look at that. We'll look at, respect that's earned, respect that's given. We're going to look at some Bible stories that have respect in it. And then we're also going to look at who should be respected and kind of why. So what is the definition of respect? Respect, in Oxford Dictionary, is a feeling of deep admiration for someone or something elicited by their abilities, qualities, or achievements. So that's a noun. The first two are nouns, and the third one is a verb. So the second one is due regard for feelings, wishes, rights, traditions of others. And then the last one, the action. See, I know what a verb is. A verb is an action. You can actually do it. Nouns, you're going to have to look it up in the dictionary. But admire someone or something deeply as a result of their abilities, qualities, or achievements. For example, if I would tell you that you could only have one more barbecue for the rest of your life, okay, no more brisket, no more pulled pork, and on one hand, we had Steel and Oak. We had Eric and Andrew and John standing up here, and they had their barbecue already. And on the other side, you have little old me, which most of you here haven't had my barbecue, few of you maybe. But you only get to pick one for the rest of your life. I mean, this is the last one. Who are you picking? I should get a raise of hands, but I don't want to. Most of you, and I would agree with this, is you pick Steel and Oak.
over the last 5 or 6 years, however long it was up at camp out, you've had their barbecue. They have earned your respect. You know that what they're going to put on the plate is worth eating. You have no idea what I'm going to put on the plate. You haven't had it. And maybe it'll be okay. Maybe it won't. So it's something that they have earned. Back in 2005, another example, back in 2005, I started working at Musselman Lumber in the office. So if you take walk in the front door and you take a couple of steps to your right, that's where I sat, right in the front. 4 steps. If you walk in the front door and you take 4 steps to the left, Rob sat there. Now, Rob was there about a year and a half longer than what I was. And if you go around the corner, John sat. He was there for 20 or 30 years. I remember people walking in that front door, and they'd look, they would see I was available, and they'd turn left and go shopping for a while until one of the other guys freed up. Why? Because I wasn't there long enough. I didn't earn their respect. I didn't know enough yet because I wasn't there long enough. Fast forward 10 years, now I'm that guy that's sitting back, Father, and there's a new guy up front. And I see the people walk in the front door. And they look at them, and they walk to somebody else and say, no thanks, I'll wait. Why? Because waiting allowed them to go to somebody that they respected, somebody that had earned their respect. And that list can go on and on. I mean, you're not going to ask me to arrange flowers for you. You're going to ask Benita to arrange flowers. Why? Because she's done it. She has experience. She has earned that respect. And we could keep going with that, but not going to. Respect is a byproduct of how we behave and how we experience others. So we experienced steel and oak. Byproduct is we're going to go to them because we know that it's worth going to. Let's look at some Bible stories where respect was shown. The first one I'm going to bring up is David. David's and cutting Saul's garment. It's in 1 Samuel 24. The whole thing, all the verses are 1 through 22, but I'm not going to read all of them. But Samuel anointed David that he's going to be the next king of Israel. Okay, after Saul dies, David's going to be next. He is God's anointed next king. But Saul is still there. And Saul gets jealous of David, so he's running around. They're running around the woods, the caves, all that kind of good stuff, desert. They're running around, and Saul's trying to kill David. And here's what happened. They find themselves, David's hiding way back in a cave. Saul comes to the entrance. So starting at verse 4. And the man of David said to him, here is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you. Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterwards, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up, left the cave, and went on his way. So you think about this story, and my first reaction is, go David. And just stick it to him a little bit. I mean, that's kind of what you want to do. And yet David, as soon as he cut it, David realized that he just got done disrespecting. He didn't show respect in that case to Saul. Now, he did show respect by not actually killing him. You know, so Saul leaves, and the rest of the story goes, Saul leaves, and David says, hey, Saul, by the way, this is what I could have done. But he chose not to because it was God's anointed. This is respect that was given. You give it because Saul was God's anointed. Queen Esther, Esther 5, Queen Esther showed respect to the king, and she saved her people. So the story goes like this. Haman got mad at Mordecai, and he was going to kill the whole Jewish nation. He couldn't get just mad at one person. He needed to kill everybody of the Jews. And so the decree went out, And Mordecai went to Queen Esther and said, you got to save your people. So Queen Esther had them fast for 3 days, starting in chapter 5, verse 1. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, in front of the king's quarters, while the king was sitting on his royal throne inside the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. And when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won favor in his sight, and he held out the gold, and he held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And the king said to her, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given you, even to half of my kingdom. And Esther said, if it please the king, let the king and Haman come to the feast which I have prepared for the king. Then the king said, bring Haman quickly, so that we may do as Esther has asked. So the king and Haman came to feast that Esther had prepared. And as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king said to Esther, what is your wish? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even up to half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled. Then Esther answered, my wish and my request is, if you have found favor in the sight of the king, if you have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my wish and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come to the feast that I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king says. So here Esther needs to go in front of the king. She didn't go barging in, and I can just see this in my head, how some people would go barging in and say, how dare you? How dare you let this happen to my people? I'm the queen. You should not allow this to happen. She didn't do it that way, okay? She went in with humility, and she went in with respect. She just showed up, okay? I can imagine that the king sitting there, and the queen comes in the back, and he sees her, and he lights up, and the thought I had was the groom standing in the front and his bride coming around the corner ready to walk down the aisle. You know, he beams. Anyway, he invites Esther in. She touches the scepter, she kneels, and she doesn't demand anything. She doesn't even give the main reason she's there. Just come and eat. Let's have a feast together. I guess what they say is true. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? Come and eat. Not once, but twice. Come and eat twice. And then, as the story goes, she didn't even, when she finally made her request, it was a request, it wasn't a demand. You know, if you would save my people, if you just would have sent us into slavery, I wouldn't have even bothered you with this. Okay, but you're going to kill us, and that includes me. We just save our lives. And so he did. And the rest of the story actually is interesting. I'll let you read it later. So moving on to another one of David's escapades. In this case, he is the one that is being respected because of who he is. David and Abigail, 1 Samuel 25, starting in verse 2. I'll set it up here a little bit for you. But David and Abigail, so in this case, David was still on the run. He was still hiding in the caves. And there was this shepherd. Actually, let me read it. Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife was Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you, and peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. I hear that you have shears. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David. So Here David is, he's hiding, he's with these shepherds, and he's, to a certain extent, he's protecting them. I don't know if he's protecting them, but he's got 600 men. He needs to feed them. Back in the Western days, it would have been called rustling. You just would have shot the steer and you would have ate it. David easily could have done that in this case. I needed some food, so there's a couple sheep. We'll take them and roast them. But David didn't do that. In fact, you can see David respecting the man here by saying, "Peace to you." Here's what the response was. When David's young men came, they said this to Nabal, in the name of David, and then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to men who come from I don't know where?" So David's young men turned away, came back, and told him this. And David said to his men, "Every man strap on his sword." And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword. About 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. So he had 600 men. He was taking 400, and he was going to teach Nabal a lesson for disrespecting him. Fortunately for Nabal, one of the servants heard and went to Abigail, his wife. And this is Abigail's response to it. "Then Abigail made haste, took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared, 5 seahs of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. And she said to her young man, 'Go on before me. Behold, I come after you.' But she did not tell her husband. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under the cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, 'Surely in vain I have guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him.' When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed on the ground. She fell at his feet. 'On me alone, my lord David, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my lord David regard this worthless fellow, Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of the Lord whom you sent.'" So when Abigail sees David, she just falls in front of him and basically takes the blame. You know, if you're going to do something, do it to me. Okay? It is interesting that she called her own husband a worthless fellow. Nabal, I had to look this up, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal means fool. There's a Hebrew word, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce it, but it means futile, worthless, and good for nothing. So that's who she was married to. So husbands, if your wife calls you Nabal to get your attention, you better listen up. I haven't been called that yet, but I've been called some interesting things to get my attention. Anyway, so she falls down, she respects David. And then jumping down to verse 32, David responds to Abigail like this. And David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who kept me from this day from blood guilt and working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, is, who has restrained me from hurting you unless you have hurried to come and meet me. Truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male." And David received from her hand what she had brought to him. And he said, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice and had granted your petition." So he responded, when you treat somebody with respect, it takes the sting out of the anger and whatever they were feeling. It allows them to take a deep breath and to calm down a little bit. And that's what happened here with David. I mean, this was going to be a massacre. This wasn't going to be any picnic. And David and his mighty men, he had earned the respect and respect should have been given, and it wasn't. Continuing on, Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like a feast of the king, and Nabal's heart was merry within, for he was very drunk, so she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. So here's the rest of the story. Abigail respects David. David sends her away. David takes his provisions that he was wanting in the first place and goes and does his thing. Abigail gets back, tells her husband, and something happened to his heart. So because of his disrespect, Nabal died. Because of Abigail's respect to David, after this happened, David sends for her and says, "Would you be my queen?" So she became queen by respecting, and Nabal died because of his disrespect. Now, it's not the only story that shows disrespect in the Bible. If we go to Numbers chapter 12, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married. For he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek, more than all the people who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, "Come out, you three, to the tent of meeting." And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forward. And he said, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, clearly and not in riddles, and he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And when the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous like snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. So they got a little snarky with Moses. They disrespected him. "What do you mean? Can't we do this?" You can, but you can't disrespect God's anointed. So the result here was that Miriam was leprous, and out of the camp she went. And I didn't bother trying to figure out how long she was going to be out or how long she might have been out. But it wasn't just a couple of days. She would have been alone for probably a couple of weeks, maybe longer. Depends on how long the Lord wanted her to be out there. And so we can see that disrespect caused a separation. Here's another story on disrespect, and I kind of smile at this one. 2 Kings 2, this is with Elisha. And he went up from there to Bethel, and while he was going up on the way, some small boys came out of the city and jeered at him, saying, "Go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head." And he turned around, and when he saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord, and two she-bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 of the boys. That's swift retribution right there. I mean, they were picking on a man that was their elder, a man that they should have respected just because of his age. And they didn't. So it'd be interesting to know a little bit more about the story. I mean, 40, you know, what were their ages? Were they between 10 and 18? Were they between 14 and 18? Were they just 10, 11, and 12? Yet? I don't know. But it'd be interesting to know just a little bit more about that. And that story. So when we respect somebody, we soften their hearts, and we are respecting the person that God put there for us. And when you disrespect somebody, you get separated, you maybe get mauled by a bear, or maybe you die. So here are some people, some humans that respect is given to, just because of who they are. And the first one is God. Why do we respect God? Genesis 1:27. "So God created man in his own image, and in the image of God he created him. Male and female, he created them." 1 Corinthians 6 19 and 20, the latter part of 19. You are not your own, for you were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body. We respect, we honor, and we fear God. First of all, because he created us. I mean, the song Indescribable this morning that we sang, if you think about respect through, that's why you respect God. That whole song. And you fear God. People. We respect people just because they are made in the image and likeness of God. 1 Peter 2:17 says, honor everyone. Love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. This last political cycle that we had kind of brought this disrespect thing almost to a whole new level. On the one side, you got the ultra right, okay, and on the other side, you got the ultra left. And you can put those two in a room and they will never agree with each other. But you should be able to get in a room with somebody you don't agree with and at least have respect for them as a human being. I disagree with the far left too. I mean, California could fall in the ocean. But we respect people because they are made in the image and likeness of God. John 13, 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You are also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Philippians 2, 1 to 4. So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only at your own interests, but at the interests of others. I kind of had to think about it. I kind of remember hearing in the news a while back of how people were getting knocked out in the streets, and so I looked it up. And it was back in 2013 that it kind of hit the news cycle. But it was when these thugs, I'll call them, had this idea that the idea, it's called the knockout game, and the idea is to punch somebody and knock them out in one blow. So you'd be walking down the streets of whatever city you lived in, and some guy would come up from behind you and just haul off and give you a good old sucker punch and try and lay you out flat. That's not respectful to a human. I don't care if you agree with them or don't agree with them. I don't care if you're from California or not. You just don't do that to somebody. Because you can't do that and you can't love a person the way Christ loved us. Government. 1 Peter 2:13 and 15. Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or the governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Romans 13, 1 through 7. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. I don't want to do this any more than you do. I work hard for my money. I don't want to have to pay taxes. But we're supposed to pay taxes because we're supposed to respect our government. Certainly, out in the world, respect for the government goes up and down. It's mainly more at an all-time low, but I think also within the church we're getting to that point too. I think it's something for us to think about. It should be, we should call them by their proper terminology. It shouldn't just be their last name. It should be Mr. Trump or President Trump. Mr. Biden, President Biden. I wasn't a fan of his either. But he's still the President of the United States. We ought to respect him, at least call him by proper name. Governors, senators. You know, if you end up in front of a judge, you don't go in there and says, and the judge looks at you and says, how do you plead? You don't say, not guilty, bro. No, it's not guilty, Your Honor. If you do end up in court and you do say that, say, bro, videotape it because I'd like to see the reaction. I don't think it's going to be very pleasant. Police officers, we respect them. I have a couple of daughters, and they didn't learn this from me. They must have learned it from their uncles, but they have a heavy foot. And so two of them have gotten stopped by the police so far. One of them was headed out near Harrisburg on 81, and she was kind of all by herself. It was just that time of day where there's nobody around, and hammer down, and she saw a cop. And she remembered a story that one of her youth teachers had told her, that if you see a cop and you know you're busted, just pull over. And so that's what she did. She sees the cop. She goes, well, I'm busted. She pulls over, puts her four-ways on, and waits for the cop to show up, which he did. And he comes up. You're in a hurry. What you in a hurry for? Well, I'm going out to see my boyfriend. I see. Is he dying? No, he's not dying. I'm just excited to see him. So she got her slap on the wrist. But I have a feeling that had she kept on driving and waited until the cop caught up to her and pulled over, that it might have been different. But she respected it. She knew what was coming. Now, I do tell this story with a little trepidation. That does not give the young people permission to go really, really fast and think they're going to get away with it. Okay? My advice to you and to everybody, I know some of you older people have heavy foots too. If you're going to drive, drive within the speed limit enough that you don't get caught. But we respect our political institutions, our law enforcement. Family. We respect our family. Exodus 20:12 says, honor your father and mother. Ephesians 6:4 says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. For this is right, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and in the instructions of the Lord. And too often we get stuck on the first part there, the honor of the father and the mother. Children, honor your father and mother. And it's true, you should. You should respect your parents. Okay, young people, you need to understand that what you think is good for your life and what your parents know is good for your life are probably two different things. But you don't have to fight about it. You don't have to disrespect them. What I want to challenge us on is, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. And I'll do fathers and mothers. Okay? This is, when they get to a certain age, 16, 17, 18, the type of discipline, the type of learning needs to change. And if we do, and if we say, do it because I told you to do it, or do this because I said so, it's kind of a form of disrespect to your children. You might be right, but at some point in time, your teenagers got to figure that out on their own. I'm still in the midst of the teenage years, so I'm still trying to figure it out on my own too, and we'll get to that a little later. So family, we honor because they are family. We honor our pastors, 1 Thessalonians 5:12-13. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves. Hebrews 13:17. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be no advantage to you. We want to respect our pastors so that when they come to church on a Sunday morning, I get to go to church and be with my people. Okay. When we show up, I remember this story when I worked at Paul B's. There was an older lady that came in, and she came in quite often, it seemed, and she was just going off on the boss. Warren was standing there, and yep, I understand, yep. And on it went. And finally she turned around after all her complaining was done, and she left. And I looked at Warren, and I made a comment, and he said, well, the problem is that whenever she comes in, that's all she does is complain. There's nothing, I've never heard her say anything good. So in plain English, he quit paying it. He pays attention. You know, he respects her that way, but he doesn't listen to what she's saying because that's all you do is complain. And that's a challenge to us, is all we do, is all that we do is complain to our pastors. You know, we sang this song 6 times in a row. Why don't we set the chairs up this way instead of that way? This person over here is doing this. We don't want to do that. We want to respect our pastors. We want to come and we want to tell them that they're doing a good job, and we want to tell them the good things that have happened. And if we have issues amongst ourselves, let's try and take care of it amongst ourselves. How do we respect our pastors? Pay attention when they're preaching. I put about 4 or 5 hours, 3 to 5 hours in, and you have been an attentive group. I can look out, your faces are up, I can see you're paying attention. It would be pretty depressing if I'd look out and the half dozen people were sleeping and the other bunch of people were looking at their phones playing a game, or if a group was speaking amongst themselves. No, if you're going to choose to come to church, then choose to pay attention. This is a challenge to some of our younger children. I'll say younger, I'll go down to 10, 9, 10, 11 years old. You watch a movie, you can sit there for an hour and a half, watch a movie, and it's rapt attention. And yet when you come to church, you got to have your little things you're playing with, your fidget tools. I get it. I was that age. Believe it or not, I was that age once. And listening to me, listening to our pastor, it says not nearly as much fun as a movie. It's just not, but respect your pastors. Pay attention to them. And last but not least, the elders, our seniors. When I was teaching the Sunday school class, this is the verse that kind of started the whole thing. Leviticus 19:32. You shall stand up before the gray head and honor the face of the old man, and you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. Job 12:12 says, wisdom is with the aged, and understanding in the length of days. You know, when we get together with my in-laws, and we're all sitting there, and the last guy walks in, or as they walk in, we all stand up to greet him and shake his hand. It's a sign of respect. I don't know that I'd have to do it with my brother-in-laws, but I was the last brother-in-law, and that's what they did before me, and so I just did it. And as I thought about that, I realized that it is something that I have seen before and quite often. You're all sitting there, somebody walks in, and everybody greets them, and they all stand up. They stand up, they greet them, and they can sit down again. My thought is that when Luke comes back to preach in 6 months from now, we ought to all stand up just because of his gray head. The problem is he'll probably listen to this sermon and then the joke will be all done. But we should stand before the gray head. We should honor the wise among us, those that have age. And when Dave had asked me, he goes, hey, will February 9th work? It's the week right before Valentine's Day. Yeah, that'll work, and you don't have to do a Valentine's message. And I was thinking about it, it's like love, respect, there's a book out by that. Can I put the two together? But what I decided to do is just ask some of our older married couples this question, or a question similar to this. One thing that has kept you married for, and in this case, I went from the year 1960 to 1969. So if you do the math on that, If you got married in 1960, you would be what, married 64 years? Something along that line? So we have three couples in our church that are married for over 60 years. We have one couple that will be married 60 years this year. And we have two more that are in the 60s, one in 67, one in 69, so it'll be 58 and 56 years. So I went to most of those men. I missed the one, he ran off to Florida before I could get to him. One thing that helped you stay married for 60 years. So one of the answers, Amos and Sadie, they've been married for 58 years this year, November 21st. He answered, but by the grace of God. And isn't that true? We've all been married, all of us that are married, for a long period of time. It is by the grace of God. Henry Horst said, for better or for worse, he goes, it was the promise. I promised Grace that I was going to stay married to her, for better or for worse, rich or poor. I asked Will Allgaier, and he said, listen to the heart of my wife. I can do that, I says. So I went home, we're sitting on the love seat, I leaned over and I listened to my wife's heart. Thump, 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 thump. I don't know what he's listening to, but it's true. We need to listen to the heart of our spouse. We need to know what they like and what they dislike. We need to know their joys, their fears, what gives them anxiety, what gets them worked up. And we can help with that. Here's my piece. We'll be married 30 years this year, so you can take this, you can cut whatever I say in half because it's not 60. But it's the communication. You need to be able to talk with each other. You need to be able to communicate those fears, those joys, what works, what doesn't work. And a lot of times you can do that on dates. Listen to the heart of your spouse and go out on a date. And they can be simple. Simple dates. One time we went out for a cup of coffee there in Clay, and then the missus wanted to stop in at Espenshades. And we walked around Espenshades, and that made her happy. I saw flowers. I was with my wife. Flowers are great. She saw flowers, and it made her excited because she likes flowers. She likes hiking. My wife does. And so this past summer, for many a year, it's been on nice Sunday afternoons or going home from church, like, you know, we should have packed a picnic lunch and we should have went hiking today. Well, my wife works, so she worked on Friday night and Saturday morning. So through that time, this took a week for me to plan this. I went to the store, I got some bologna, I got some cheese, I got some crackers, I got lunch. And Saturday morning, I hit it. I hit it down in the downstairs in our basement refrigerator. We had a bag of something there, and I pulled that front and stuck it in behind, so I didn't want her to go down and see my preparations. And so Saturday morning, I put the lawn chairs in back of the car. I got a change of clothes for her. I got all this stuff, and I brought it down to church, and I put the fruit in the refrigerator and the lawn chairs out in the shed, and Sunday morning comes around, and I got somebody to distract her for 10 minutes, and I took it all out to the car. And I was going to wait. We were going up to Antietam State Park, which is north of Reading, and I was going to wait until we just pulled on the 222, and the thought was, well, where are we going? And then I was going to break the surprise. I pulled out on the 322 kind of quick to get in front of somebody else, and all the stuff went tumbling across the back. So, but we got there, and we had fun, and I did everything just about right, except I got her a long-sleeve T-shirt in the middle of July when it was about 90 degrees outside. But it was fun. It was an inexpensive date for $20. Okay. Not all of us need to go on dates where we get on an airplane and fly from Lancaster to Philly and have a big fancy restaurant and then get back on said airplanes and away back to Lancaster again. That's great. If you can do that, more power to you. Not all of us can. Sometimes, I wrote this down. Dating, A date is nothing more than putting away all the distractions and giving your spouse your full and undivided attention. Moving on. Number four, we need to respect each other. Claude Kurtz said this to me. He was the first person I asked this question. And when I asked this question, I stood and waited for an answer. So they didn't have weeks and days to think about it. They all answered within a minute. And that's kind of what I wanted. I just, give me your first answer. And Claude said, you need to respect each other. I was like, oh, well, that works. I can make this work. And it's true, you do. I was in a situation where it was a get-together, and a husband was kind of picking on his wife. If you know what I mean by a roast, he kind of roasted her a little bit. And today they're no longer together because I couldn't even tell if he was joking or if he was serious. At the time, if you would have brought it up to him, oh, it was just a joke. The problem is, it is never, never appropriate to belittle your wife or your spouse in front of other people. It's never appropriate to do that. Number five, this is the last one. Leanne Weaver told me this. You got to love, you got to forgive, and you got to repeat it. Love, forgive, repeat. Now, for some of our spouses, it's love, forgive, 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 repeat. Some's the other way around. But for the grace of God, for better or for worse, listen to the weight of your spouse, listen to the heart of your spouse. You need to respect each other, love, forgive, repeat. Those five came from five men that have been married a very long time. It is something for us to pay attention to. Because wisdom is with the aged and the understanding in the length of days. So married on June 24th, 1961, Henry and Grace Horst. So this year they'll be married 64 years. Married June 23rd, 1962, Claude and Vera Kurtz. This year they'll be married 63 years. Married September 1st, 1962. Leon and Velma, they'll be married 63 years. Married September 18th, 1965, Willa and Irma Allgaier. So they will hit 60 years in September. Amos and Sadie were married November 21st, 1967. And Ivan and Ruthie Martin married September 13th, 1969. So they'll be married 56 years this year. I stopped at 1969. This all came out of the church directory. So if you're not in the church directory and married in the 60s, I missed you and I'm sorry. But I could only go with the information that I had. I would challenge us to talk to our older, gray-haired, bold men in the congregation. Ask them questions. You need advice, ask them. I'm sure they've been through it. I'm sure, especially when it comes to marriage, I'm sure they've been through it. Let's respect one another. Let's respect our elders. Let's respect our pastors. Let's respect our families. It's something that's pretty easy to do. Sometimes you just need to be reminded of it. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this morning. Thank you that we could gather together. And Lord, as we looked at these Bible stories and as we looked at advice from our seniors this morning, just ask that you would allow it to touch our hearts and to see if we can improve on our respect for others, for humans, for families, for pastors. Lord, I just ask that you would bless the remaining time of our service. Amen.